TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. So we're seeing the Wall Street Journal. And this is one of those things where you go, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Pentagon and the State Department have a plan that would give Ukrainian soldiers and Ukrainian fighters anti-tank weapons, anti-aircraft weapons, other arms, so that they would be able to defend themselves against these Russian separatists. And, you know, the part that shocked me in the article is that they are putting out this, or have, you know, let this be known, and the administration doesn't have a position. They have no idea what the White House is going to do. And yet you've got General Mattis, who, you know, kind of pushing this through without Trump. Interesting moment. And look, as someone who doesn't really have an idea of everything that's going on there, I go, you know, are we arming people again? Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? That's why we've asked our expert in the area, Andrea Chalupa, to come talk with us. She's also the co-organizer of the March for Truth. Andrea, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
So have you seen this article by the Wall Street Journal?
Yes, I have. And it's very interesting. It's something that both Democrats and Republicans pushed for under President Obama. And the fact that it finally came under Trump is very interesting.
Now, as I was reading through the article, and maybe I read it wrong, but it said that, you know, the Pentagon has this plan, but the White House doesn't know about it or hasn't signed off on it or isn't, you know, isn't moving. And you look at, you know, the dynamics going on between Trump and Putin. This can't help him.
Right. I mean, it's just like the sanctions bill against Russia that he has yet to sign. I mean, you know, what this new development shows with giving defensive aid, major defensive aid that Ukraine's been asking for years, and Ukraine's allies and the U.S. supporters on both sides of the aisle have been asking for years. The fact that it's come down under Trump just sort of signals that, you know, the Republican Party, which is historically very strong against the Kremlin, very hawkish, among the Ukrainian American community, there's a very large and vocal segment that is very Republican because of that. And with a Republican president, at least in name, in the Oval Office, with a lot of Republican people being flushed into the White House and you know, other office in the federal government under Trump, you suddenly have these floodgates open to give Ukraine what it needs in order to have a very strong defense against Russia. So that's basically how this sort of transpired. It just sort of shows that the adults in the room in the Trump administration are, to some extent, in certain corners, working towards what they feel is sound policy,
right,
in terms of global security.
Yeah, generally, I'm opposed to the idea of handing out weapons to people. But in looking at this scenario, and the fact that, you know, over the last couple of years, I think it's been like 10,000 people in Ukraine have been killed since 2014, have been killed in this conflict. You know, you go, at some point, don't you have to give people the ability to defend themselves, and not in a way where you're taking a spitball to a gunfight, but actually to be able to defend themselves.
Right. What everybody needs to understand, this is very, very important, is that when Ukraine, so shortly after, you know, the fall of communism and Ukraine becoming a politically independent nation, free of Russia, so this was December 1994, a few years, you know, into Ukraine's new statehood, Ukraine struck a deal where they were convinced by the U.S. government under President Clinton, the British government, and the Russian government. So these three allies, at the time, you know, we were allied with the West, with Russia, because we wanted to sort of start over in the 90s and give, and you know, Russia was headed, you know, was trying to sort of find its way with democracy. This
right.
was a totally different time in the world in 1994. So at this time, Russia, the Great Britain, and the United States convinced the Ukrainian government to give up its arsenal of nuclear weapons, which was, you know, So that was huge. So Ukraine gave up all of its nuclear weapons. And we know that's like being a nuclear power is what Iran is striving for, what North Korea is striving for. And Ukraine willingly gave up its nuclear weapons, but for a price. And that price was assurance from the U.S., from us, from Great Britain and Russia, that should it be attacked, that these three countries would protect its security.
Right. No, I mean, and this is one of those moments where you go, if you believe that we need to be moving towards, you know, getting rid of nuclear weapons and convincing nations not to pursue them, we should actually end up holding up our end of the bargain, right?
Exactly right. And so under President Obama, you had Ukrainians from, all walks of the political life, Ukrainians in the government, Ukrainian civic leaders, you had supporters who were, Republican leaders and Democratic leaders saying to President Obama, we must honor the Budapest Memorandum. We must honor it. Now, America and Great Britain and Russia, having had great lawyers, they worded the Budapest Memorandum in such a way that it had sort of tricky language where it wasn't directly enforceable. Like there's nothing in this language, in this very cleverly put together document that all parties signed that really bound the hands of the U.S. and Great Britain and Russia. But regardless, everybody sort of fought for the fact that in principle, Ukraine made such a major sacrifice for its own security, given who its neighbor is, Russia, and gave up its nuclear arsenal. So in principle, you must now come to its aid and defend it. Why would they give up such a wealth of power as being a nuclear power? So the Budapest Memorandum has been something that was a major, major issue these last couple years, and people who supported Ukraine's sovereignty really pushed this issue to demand this defensive aid. And I really can't stress, in addition to that, I've spoken with Ukrainian soldiers and Ukrainian and those from the West, who are security advisors from the UK, from the US, who are advising the Ukrainian military, and people who are focused in European and US think tanks and watching the movement of Russian tanks inside Ukraine and really, really tracking the war and Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I can tell you one of the most disturbing things about Russia's invasion of Ukraine is that Russia is testing a lot of heavy machinery against Ukrainian soldiers that no American soldier has ever had to go up against. So the American military in fighting ISIS in the Middle East is used to a very different type of warfare than what Russia is waging on Ukraine. What Russia was waging on Ukraine, just this heavy amount of tanks coming in, is more like what we're used to in World War II era,
sure.
Yeah. And these are brand new weapons that are being tested on Ukrainian soldiers. You have to keep in mind, Ukrainians are fighting with a military that was underfunded, under-maintained by its former corrupt leader, Viktor Yanukovych, who was a Putin puppet, who was elected with the major help of Paul Manafort. So just like Paul Manafort got Donald Trump elected here in the U.S., Paul Manafort got Putin's puppet, Viktor Yanukovych, elected in Ukraine. And what this Putin puppet went on to do was really weaken Ukraine's own military. And that's very familiar, that sort of weakening of a Russian ally, weakening the military. Because now we see Putin's puppet Trump in the U.S. weakening the State Department, deliberately weakening the State Department. And to the point where, there's a mass exodus of top State Department brass who've been there for decades. Those who remain are miserable. I've spoken with some folks in the State Department. They're absolutely miserable under Tillerson. Nothing's getting done. Things are frozen. Things are grossly underfunded. So Trump's behavior in terms of defanging, taking the might out of our State Department is very similar to what Putin's puppet in Ukraine did to Ukraine's own military. So Ukraine is fighting when Russia invaded Ukraine, they had a weakened military to begin with. So that's what made the Budapest Memorandum so much more urgent, and the U.S. and Great Britain pledge, at least in principle, to defend Ukraine in exchange for giving up its nuclear weapons.
What do you say to the person? Because I'm not a big war fan, to be honest.
No, I'm not either.
I'm not a war fan
whatsoever.
But I understand that if you're being attacked, you've got to be able to defend yourself. There are voices out there saying we can't be part of this. You know, no more wars. What we need to do is we need to send humanitarian aid and we need to help with diplomacy and education. How do you respond to that?
You know, I'm a very interesting person, I have to say, to speak to this, because I grew up protesting Bush 1 and Bush 2's wars in the Middle East. You know, I knew war protests as a child. You know, when I first met Medea Benjamin of Code Pink when she spoke at my university, it was like a religious experience. And I cried for many months after, describing the horrific slideshow of images of children maimed by U.S. bombs in Afghanistan. So I'm stridently anti-war. And what's been really fascinating and disturbing and a difficult experience for me is knowing Ukrainian soldiers on the front line, meeting them, watching their eyewitness testimony and video tapes and elsewhere, and seeing images of Ukrainian soldiers squashed like bugs by Russian tanks. It's really sort of challenged my concept of, you know what, if it wasn't for the military, we wouldn't have gotten the Nazis out of Paris. We wouldn't have gotten the Nazis out of, you know, Europe. And sometimes you can't be isolationist. Sometimes you do have to fight evil. And when I mean evil, I'm talking about Putin's Kremlin. And if anyone thinks that's hyperbole, then I will point you to an excellent panel at the Brooklyn Museum, organized by Penn International, where they featured writers and editors from Russia who risked their lives to publish. And when they were asked the question by their moderator, who is an American editor here in New York, saying, you know, isn't it a little bit too much that we're kind of characterizing Putin as this evil person? And the Russians on stage looked at each other, and finally one said, you know what, sometimes it is black and white. And I can direct anybody to that link. We are fighting a very grossly imperialistic regime that has, in Putin's Kremlin, has no choice but to go to war to distract his people from all the abuses that they inflict on the Russian people. So we have a very determined enemy in Russia, and it's Ukraine that is on the front lines of NATO. That's right, the buffer state, right between us, NATO, and an aggressive, militarized expansionist Russia. It's Ukrainian soldiers who are cannon fodder, who are putting their lives on the line. And what's heartbreaking is that these men and women who are signing up to fight the war and protect the rest of Europe from Russia, these are brilliant young people who, you know, otherwise would be mechanical engineers, who otherwise would be doctors, who otherwise would be from all walks of life of society, contributing to the Ukrainian economy, contributing to the sciences and technology inside Ukraine, who'd be advancing their own society forward. And it's their lives that are being taken. And that's a huge cost to Ukraine's people. And it's heartbreaking. I can really go on and on about the specific individual lives that you have to keep in mind. Like, think about the people you know. It's regular folks who've left their kids at home, to go out and basically risk their lives for their country and for a free Europe.
So let me ask you this. I mean, because most of us as Americans, sadly, are ignorant of foreign policy and our relations around the globe. You know, Ukraine is considered an ally, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ukraine is a very strong ally. You know, Ukraine has suffered under Russian colonization and Russian imperialism. It's developed this whole beautiful culture of resistance over the centuries through its poets, through its songwriters, through its artists, et cetera. And it has this beautiful resistance culture, which we saw fully on display in the revolution of Euromaidan, which was essentially just an art festival, and that's what kept people out in the streets in those very Arctic, freezing cold months. And so it's extremely inspiring, their fight for freedom, and well, people are willing to risk their lives and live inside a prison. And they see the U.S., they see how we live, they see us on Instagram, and they want to live in a free country like the United States. They want to do business with their tech companies, their IT companies, with the United States. They just want to be a fully functioning, stable democracy. That is what they want across the board. That's what they can all agree on,
right.
You know, except for some factions and factions, mind you, that are being fueled and engineered largely with the help of Paul Manafort and his FSB linked ally in Kiev, who is still very active in Kiev. I was just in Kiev, and that's what people told me. It really is. I tell everybody, is what Martin Luther King told us, and was absolutely right about. You know, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere, and we've seen that as Americans so clearly. Because if we had taken seriously what Russia was doing to Ukraine, what Putin was doing to Ukraine, if we had paid closer attention to that as Americans, we would not have been surprised when they came for us and hacking our presidential election. Because all the things that Putin did, the United States tested them out first on Ukrainians with hacking the election, trying to change the election results, you know, infiltration of political parties, buying off dark money, funneling into the opposition. Paul Manafort being all, you know, with his tentacles everywhere in Ukraine's government, you know, trying to wield puppet strings there. If we had paid closer attention to the injustice that Putin was doing in Ukraine, we would not have been shocked, and we would have known who Paul Manafort was when he arrived to manage Trump's campaign in spring 2016. We would have all been shocked as Americans.
Yeah. And it's interesting how it all comes back to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and the orange guy sitting there. So last question I've got for you then, you know, in looking at this, because, you know, I grew up at a time, you know, during the Cold War, where we had all of these proxy fights going on all over the world. Are we seeing Ukraine become that, maybe that first or that next proxy war, where, you know, maybe we had seen things like this in the past between Russia and the U.S.?
I think certainly, you know, obviously, the American military, NATO military, is, you know, we're doing exercises with our Ukrainian allies on the ground in the Black Sea, and that is necessary for us to do, because we don't, you know, like I've always said on your show, we have to think in decades. This decade, it's Ukraine. If Ukraine falls, Poland is next, the Baltics are next, and that's NATO. So, you know, it's important for us to have this, you know, military engagement partnership together so we can be prepared should the worst happen. You know, as a country, for your own security, you always want to be prepared for the worst case scenario, or else you're completely caught off guard, just like Americans were in 2016, when we never could have imagined, not even President Obama, that what Russia was doing to Ukraine would come here, and it has.
Yeah. Obviously something we will talk about as the weeks and months go on, and I'd love to have you come back and explain and keep us up to date, because look, I, you know, you don't see a lot of this in the mainstream media. It's good to hear your thoughts.
Thank you so much, Rick. I appreciate it.
Andrea, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people.